reporting the news honestly and fairly in the age of Trump. Hi, good morning. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation about the state of the news business as we welcome the general manager of Action News Jax. We've also got a look at his new book. You can join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, new transitional housing for ex-offenders in the city is opening up this month. Plus, we've got a sneak peek at the 2019 Southern Living Idea House right in our own backyard. We'll tell you how you can go see it. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, fake news, the enemy of the people. That's how our current president, Donald Trump, describes the news media. At the same time, the president, speaking yesterday with a journalist, George Stephanopoulos of ABC News, said that he would accept illegal foreign help from Russia in the next election if it was offered.
Let's put yourself in a position. You're a congressman. Somebody comes up and says, hey, I have information on your opponent. Do you call the FBI?
I'll tell you what, you do.
I've seen a lot of things over my life. I don't think in my whole life I've ever called the FBI. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it.
To be clear, it is illegal to accept information or assistance from a foreign government in the context of a domestic political campaign. Now, the president's comments put him at odds not only with Democratic candidates who have made a point of saying they'd refuse help from foreign governments as they seek their party's nomination, but he's also at odds with his own FBI director, Christopher Wray. Covering the White House and politics in general in this era has been challenging, to say the least, for journalists. Media outlets are also dealing with the fracturing of their business from a financial standpoint as digital disruption is on the march. So how do you do the news well and profitably in the age we are living in? There's someone who has a lot to say about that. It's Bob Longo, the general manager of Action News Jax, CBS 47 and Fox 30. Bob is also out with his first novel, Boomerang Bandito, and he joins us now to discuss it all. Bob Longo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. What are your questions for Action News Jax General Manager Bob Longo? As we talk about the state of the news business, give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Well, our Facebook page is open as well. And we'll talk about the book in a moment, which is really exciting. Your first book.
Yeah.
You're having a book signing and a launch party tonight. More about that in a few moments. But first, as someone who is in charge of two television stations here in the city of Jacksonville, the CBS and Fox affiliates, a duopoly, it's called Action News Jax, you've got a lot on your plate these days.
Yes.
Let's begin with the politics. As we just heard the president being interviewed by a television journalist of ABC News saying that he would accept illegal foreign help from a hostile foreign power, Russia, if it was offered in the next election. At the same time, he's calling the news media the enemy of the people.
Yeah, there's a lot to chew on there, right?
Right. So how do you, as a news boss, handle these cross currents, making sure that your newsroom is covering not just the national stuff, but local news in a way that you feel serves this community?
Wow. Yeah. And great setup. I mean, that is to hear anyone, let alone the president, say those things, a virtual admittance of breaking the law in the past and a willingness to do it again in the future, right? So I think number one, you have to report that like you just did. Hey, this thing happened. Here's what he said, and here's how people are reacting to it. And oh, by the way, here's the legality of that. That's not fake news. That's something this guy said. He happens to be the president, and it happens to be illegal, and people are upset about it. Those are the facts. There's nothing fake about that. And you know, to be called names, whether it's fake media or it's fake news or it's we don't like you, I mean, it's name-calling, and journalists have been the brunt of people who don't like what they report forever, right? Because if you're going to do an honest job and you're really committed to covering your community or the nation or whatever your beat is, if it's Capitol Hill or the White House, then your job really is to kind of dig into it and to see what the heck is happening. And you're going to find things about the people you cover that they are not going to like. And it is sometimes going to be false, and you'll walk away from that. And it is sometimes going to be true, and you'll run with that. And in running with that, you will upset those people. And so for the president to call someone, you know, fake news, at this point, it's just part of the landscape, sad but true. And so it no longer upsets me. I expect it. I would be shocked if it didn't happen. And I tell our folks that, you know, on a local level, we have to do the same thing. It's about value. When you're watching TV, when you're listening to the radio, when you're reading a newspaper, a magazine, or a podcast or whatever, you want value. And we determine that our viewers determine value to be something that is of importance to them in the community, a local story. And, you know, we'll upset Lenny Curry, the mayor, and he'll have his peace with us, and that's fine. We don't have anything against Mayor Curry. He's the mayor. He's in charge. And so we look at the way the city operates. Same thing in Neptune Beach, Jack's Beach, Ponte Vedra, whatever. So our mission is to cover our beat, our community, and to do it fairly and honestly. And we happen to think that digging into meaty stories is the way to go.
It's 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in a moment for Action News Jax's General Manager, Bob Longo. And in addition to all of the thorny issues around press freedom, which is a cornerstone of our society here in America, our democracy, you're dealing with a lot of disruption in the television news business, mm-hmm. as we are here in the public media business. In particular, you're focusing more and more on digital first. Let's talk about that.
Sure.
Because it's a very different world from when you and I got into this business a long
time
ago.
We're still kids, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I just celebrated my 25th birthday last week. No, it's different today. And so, you know, your people are being asked to do a lot more in a much shorter time frame. Profit margins aren't what they used to be. Do you worry about that? I mean, do you foresee a time when communities won't have three different or four different television, local television news operations?
I think I'd be a fool if I answered anything, but yeah, that kind of thing does keep me up at night. I believe that in order to be one of those left standing, that you have to do the right thing by the community, and you have to have a hard-hitting, aggressive, as expansive as possible journalistic platform. And these days, that means you got to be on Twitter. You have to be on Facebook. If there's a new platform that comes out tomorrow, we'll have to be on that. We have our apps. And you know, those really aren't profit centers yet. I think they will be at some point. But when people get up in the morning, there's plenty of research that shows this. The first thing they do is they grab their phone. They have a smartphone, they check the weather, they check some headlines. So we have to be out there. Our goal is that once you do that, you'll transition to the TV, because that's where the big part of the business still remains. And so our job through the day is to give people the news, and in shorter snippets, on social media, on digital, on our app, and to carry that conversation and adapt that story through the day. So a story about Melissa and Bob at 9 a.m. should be extremely different and more vetted and meted out by 5 o'clock and a different story. So as a listener or viewer, you may hear the story at 9 a.m., but by 5 p.m., it's different. So the goal is to carry people across those platforms. And by doing that, we'll be one of the stations, one of the platforms, one of the companies left standing.
Okay, let's talk for a minute about your book. It's called Boomerang Bandito.
Yeah.
This is a novel about a guy named Dan who was dealing drugs in the 1980s in Miami Beach. He decides to get out of that business, live an honest life, but his past catches up with him.
It does.
What inspired this tale?
My wife says, you know, you should write about what you know. You're not a drug dealer, are you? I'm like, no, never was a drug dealer. But look, as a reporter, I covered a lot of interesting characters. I sat in a courtroom once in Rochester, New York, covering a RICO trial, okay, a federal trial. And there were all these, I'll just say it, mobsters in there. And I'm like, oh my God, these guys are so colorful. And they would talk to us afterwards and use all kinds of colorful language. And so people like that formed characters in my mind, right? And as a reporter, which I was for many years, I had to tell stories, character-driven stories. And those characters kind of lived in my brain after that. And I always wanted to write a novel with all these characters in my head, bad, good, and indifferent. And so these characters kind of took shape in different ways in this book. Dan's a good guy. He goes down the wrong path. Bad things happen to him as a 19-year-old. He gets out by the skin of his you-know-what, and he barely survives. And then later in life, these bad people catch up with him. So it's, you know, it's not a Greek tragedy. It's more of a summer beach romp, right? But, you know, it's a visual story. I like to tell stories visually. So as a TV reporter back in the day, I really liked telling stories about people, about things and places, and writing to these amazing pictures and video. And I try to do that in the book.
Okay. You're going to read a little bit from your book now, Boomerang Bandito. I wonder if all your employees are listening right now, by the way. Pascal, your news director, who I used to work with a lot. Hey, Pascal.
She's great, right?
She is.
Well, Pascal's boyfriend, Mo, is the artist who did the cover.
Nice. It's a cool picture of Miami Beach. It's got a Miami Vice kind of look to it.
It does. Yeah. And if you flip it upside down, it's the Pittsburgh skyline, because a part of the book takes place in Miami and part of the book takes place in Pittsburgh. And there's the boomerang effect. So I'll just read maybe, if I can, like the first 2.5 pages.
Sure.
So it starts off. Miami Beach, Florida, July 1982. It's early in the morning, and I'm standing naked in a bathtub inside the New Yorker Hotel with a razor in one hand and a can of Nair in the other. I've done the best I can to not cut chunks of flesh from my body, but the combination of shaving and Nairing with the addition of the warm water coming out of the shower head makes me feel like hot flaming matches are cascading off my raw body. Up until 15 minutes ago, I was a very hairy young man. My name is Dan Griffin. The painfully clean, bare look isn't a passing fancy I've designed to help me pick up models on South Beach strolling bare-chested. No, it's so the duct tape can hold specially wrapped, tightly packed kilos of Colombian cocaine to my skin underneath a body glove wetsuit, which itself is underneath khakis and a loose-fitting shirt and blazer. It's so the packages will stay put and stay unnoticed at the airport and on the plane. It's so when it's time to rip the duct tape and cocaine from my skin remains attached to my body so I don't collapse in a crying, bleeding, whimpering mess in front of men with guns who would laugh and likely shoot. And then I wouldn't be able to trade those very bad men all those neatly wrapped packs of cocaine for a duffel bag full of crisp, bundled $100 bills later today in Colorado. No pain, no gain.
Whoa.
Keep going?
No, I think there's some people that want to talk to you, so we're going to get them on the phone. But but that gives you an idea of how this book progresses. And I have to ask you this. I know you said you never dealt drugs.
Yeah.
But are you a little bit of this character, Dan?
You know, good question. I think there's a little bit of the, you know, want to do the right thing. Maybe you go down the wrong path from time to time, but you come out okay in the end. And I think that's kind of like the way a lot of people are, right? I mean, who doesn't love a story about someone who screws up and then apologizes and then goes on and becomes whatever, right? Not saying that happened with me, but—
Not saying that.
Okay, won't admit to that. But hey, look, everyone makes mistakes, picks themselves up and keeps going. Perseverance and aggressive love of life. I'm all about that.
Yeah, me too, actually. That's a good way to live your life. And lots of calls coming in now for Bob Longo, the CEO of Action News Jax.
Now I'm the CEO?
Oh, I got a raise. General manager, that's right. It's
I like
general
CEO.
Manager.
It's got a nice
I just promoted you.
Ring
yeah.
to it.
What are your thoughts about the state of the news business? 549-2937. Rusty is on the west side. Hi, Rusty. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Well, film noir and Miami Beach, it's a freewheeling conversation here. But
that's right.
Just back to one of, I think these are kind of noir times that we're living in somehow. But just back to some of the initial comments is that just to repeat ourselves, that a free and unfettered press is the linchpin or foundation of democracy since 1774.
Hey, Rusty, it's the only job guaranteed in the Constitution, really, right?
Right there in the First Amendment, highly protected, and political speech above all else, it seems. God bless Melissa Ross.
Thanks,
for
Rusty.
For example, when she, that you had Mr. Zahn on a week or so ago, and, so we've got the national scene, the chief executive up there. We've got our local political establishment and Mr. Zahn. And, Melissa Ross, it was the investigative reporter, was taking the tough questions to Mr. Zahn. And the guy's a hedge funder. He's a hedge funder from Wall Street. he's going to do what a hedge funder, venture capitalist kind of guy does, you know, bust things up, sell them off, that kind of thing. So God bless the investigative reporter that understands the story, the tough questions, and takes them to the, you know, subject of the interview. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for standing up for the free press, Rusty. That is what we do, and that is important. And it is what distinguishes us from a lot of other countries around the world where there is effectively no free press and people are not informed about what their government is doing. And in particular, let me ask you about this, Bob. As newspapers all over the country are struggling and in some cases closing and not existing anymore, communities across this nation are going to be left without a local newspaper that's a watchdog on government. And increasingly, you see local TV shops stepping up to fill that void. You have some reporters at Action News who are trying to do that kind of work and doing it well.
Thank you.
And so how important do you see that aspect of your operation?
Investigative is number one in our hearts. It's at this time, actually, what people are hungering for as well. So that's nice to be able to say, we want to do this thing. It's the right thing to do. Oh, and by the way, people want it right now. Investigative journalism is at the heart of really good journalism across the nation's history. And you're right. For decades and over 100 years, most of that has come from newspapers, great newspapers. I mean, think of Watergate. I mean, it wasn't a radio or TV station that broke that story. It was a newspaper. And the Pentagon Papers, things like that. So it is left to TV, I think, to pick this up and run with it. And there are several shops in most towns, the TV newsrooms, and if they are doing investigative journalism at each of those shops, then cumulatively it could make up the bulk of what we've lost with newspaper. But it is sad to see the newspapers dwindle like they have, to thin out like they have, and to have less investigation, because it does take time, right? And so you're not getting that story perhaps out of somebody every day. And so, you know, bean counters are left to say, well, is this person really worth it? Can we get somebody else to do this? They'll fill more column space. They'll have more time on the radio or TV station. They'll be a better buy for us. So that's the pressure, is to deliver good quality journalism and to do it. And, you know, we're a business, so we have to make a profit.
Yeah. And to make a profit, local TV news gets criticized a lot for covering the easy, cheap, sensational thing.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about that criticism?
I think it's correct a lot of the time. I think that because it's such a visual medium, because it is easy to go and get a crime scene or a fire or a shooting scene, that over the decades, we've done that, not just here, everywhere. The whole Action News format, Eyewitness News format, was based off of a lot of short stories on crimes and things like that. And back in the day, in the 70s and 80s and 90s, people would be drawn to watch those stories because it was, oh my God, I can't believe that's happening. Now, time has passed. I think the burden on the journalist is to cover those stories when they're important, when they have an impact, and to find the value of those stories. So, okay, yeah, so someone got shot, and it's in a neighborhood where people get shot a lot, and was this person killed or not? You have to actually ask yourself those questions. How important is this to anybody who doesn't know this person who was shot? And if the answer is, well, he was a father of three, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, the value in that story is to tell that human being's personal story.
Jordan in Springfield. Hi, Jordan. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. He set up perfectly for my question. Bob, I'm wondering, you know, I completely agree that investigative journalism is really at the core of where, you know, local news can really add value. I'm wondering if, you know, in order to stay profitable, do you view it as a foregone conclusion that you almost have to have some clickbaity stories and, you know, some of the more sensational stories mixed in with the hard-hitting, you know, thorough, deep quality journalism just in order to stay profitable, because that's the stuff that drives eyeballs and, as a result, advertising revenue.
Well, the profit comes later, right? The coverage comes first. And people are creatures of habit and taste and things like that. And people watch TV news in a manner in which If you give them 10 10-second stories in a row, they'll become bored. If you give them 3 45-second stories in a row, they'll become bored. If you give them 1 3-minute story, they could become bored. And so you do mix it up. You've got a couple of short stories, a medium story, a long story. I'm not even talking what that content is right now. It's just the way people are wired to watch and pay attention. It's the attention span, right? And so, yeah, you do have to cover some things that are shorter version. And I'm not even saying what they could be. It could be a crime story. It could be a city council story. It could be a story about a manatee stuck in the mud. It could be 30 seconds long. And then that leads into a story about something perhaps about ecology on the beaches and plastic, because, you know, we had this big turtle that showed up dead up north of here a couple of days ago. It had a plastic bag stuck in its throat. Well, that's a story about a turtle, but it's also a story about pollution, plastic, the ocean, and nature. And so we did that story, and that's kind of how we did that. And that, I think that that tells a story, it gives value to people, and it makes them think, oh my God, maybe we shouldn't have plastic straws and plastic bags.
So as I look on your website, actionnewsjax.com, that is what I see. It's a mix of things, like most local websites. Heavy on the weather, though, because, of course, most local TV news shops really emphasize local weather coverage, especially here in Florida.
Yeah, and you'd think Florida, who cares, right? It's going to be sunny most of the day. And in the summer, it's going to rain in the afternoon. But weather's a big part of people's lives. And it is part of that value proposition. I want to know when I get up in the morning what my day is going to be like and how it's going to affect me and impact my life and my children and my drive to and from work or school and all that. So we do that. And you know, we make sure that these are scientists. They're not just pretty people on TV. They're scientists. Mike Burrish, best meteorologist I've ever worked with, and his team is rock solid. And when we have hurricanes like we did with Irma and Matthew, I felt safe and secure because these folks know their stuff and they can tell people what to do. We had when Irma was here, there was our storm tracker was out south of Jacksonville. There was a storm cloud. It was mostly dark. And Mike said, look, stay to the west of that thing. I think there's a tornado embedded in that because of what I'm seeing on the radar. And oh, by the way, if you live in the path of this. And so he's actually telling people valuable information that could save their life. So yeah, we get stones thrown at us for doing too much weather. But boy, when it really matters, no one is turning away.
Yeah. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Bob Longo, who runs Action News Jax, CBS 47 and Fox 30 Action News, about the state of the media today. And also his new book, Boomerang Bandito. Keep listening. We'll tell you about tonight's book signing launch party. But first, let's take a few more calls. Pete is on the west side. Hi, Pete. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I would like to understand why none of the media wants to expose the illegal actions of the city. And I can give you specifics.
Okay. Like what?
JEA is demanding commercial customers put in a backflow preventer. Existing customers, if it were $30,000, I can give you more examples, but let's go to that one specifically. I'm an existing customer.
I'm not. All right, now let me ask you something. You're saying JEA is engaging in illegal activity with its customers?
To demand a customer, existing customer, again, they're a monopoly. To demand a existing customer spend money on a backflow preventer.
Okay, let me put you, you know what, Pete? I'm going to put you on hold and have one of our reporters talk to you because that, okay, I think, is such a specific question, and I'm not sure even what you're talking about, but I appreciate the call. And thanks, Pete, I'm going to get your number. When it comes to JEA and everything that's going on with the utility, going beyond individual gripes, but everything going on with that utility more broadly in this community, that is a matter of importance to many thousands of people in this community, and there have been a number of recent controversies about JEA that local print and broadcast media have covered and will continue to cover.
Yeah, and so you're right, Melissa. There's the bigger issue of JEA on any given day. I mean, they were up for sale potentially last year at this time, right? And they're building a new headquarters, and they are funded majority-wise by the public. So taxpayers pay for this. So they have a right to know how their money is being spent, and that's the bigger, broader. The question that we just heard is a very specific one, and that's either true or not. And yeah. So you did the right thing. You put them on hold, you check them out, you take the facts down, you get a hold of JEA, and that's how a story gets fleshed out a lot of times.
Miranda in Arlington. Hi, Miranda. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. That backflow preventer issue is pretty big because those things cost like $600 and it's awful.
Okay, but yeah, we'll look into it.
I was wondering if Bob could speak to the advertising on social media and of products that aren't linked to a news story, because I think it really adds to the fake news label. But then also if there was a push to help consumers interpret the news better, especially in the changing tide of how we receive our media, to know that you need two sources, or that a poll, you know, you can only trust if it's plus or minus 3 standard deviations. And if there was a way to help like educate do better stories that present this, here's what real news is,
yeah,
and help distinguish what fake news is.
Right, sure. You know, and in the 2016 election, Facebook in particular has been rightfully criticized for being a platform for articles and advertorial looking items often placed by Russian bots that looked like news articles,
yeah,
but were actually propaganda.
Yeah.
You know, and so what about her question?
It's a good one, right? I mean, how do you tell what you're looking at is the real deal? I mean, you can go to Snopes all you want, right? And check that out. It's factual or it's not factual, but sometimes it's so insidious that it looks like the real deal. It will fool you every time, right? So there is a responsibility for credible media to do the right thing. And I think what she was talking about were these advertorials where it's a story about, you pick a subject, right? It has to be clearly marked that it's an advertisement or sponsored content in some way. And we've got some of that on our site. And it is clearly marked sponsored content. And you can tell whereabouts it is. It's not the main stories. It's not the stories of the day. It's typically a consumer or a health benefit type story, like you would find in a men's health magazine or something like that. And it's marked advertisement or sponsored content. So I think that answers part one. Part two is really an interesting question, which is, shouldn't we at some point on our medium tell people how it is that we go about doing what we do, right? Yeah, we do get two sources. If someone calls and says, hey man, the city's got the JEA's got a problem with backflows and they're charging people $600, well, we will check that out, right? If a source comes to us and says, I've got a scoop on Melissa Ross, elected councilwoman, that she's doing this illegal thing.
Don't take me down this nightmarish path of dystopian hellscapes.
Yeah, and you're an elected official. How about that? So you have to flush it out. You have to find it to be true. If it's a document, it's pretty easy to figure that out. And Florida is blessed with great open records laws and freedom of information laws that we can get that stuff. Anybody can. It's for the public. We just happen to do it for a living, right? But you got to go down that path. And if you've got a story that is unsourced, well, then you better get 2-3 sources on it every time. And they better know what they're talking about.
Chad tweets the show, why does the media seem reluctant to fact check Trump or any other elected official in real time? Local media seems more interested in trying to find balance, even when one side is blatantly lying or misleading. Journalists should always speak truth to power. Elizabeth is on Phillips Highway. Elizabeth, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This is a great program. I enjoy listening to it.
Thanks.
Following up on the previous caller's suggestion about educating people about what the different media that they're paying attention to, I just was calling to ask for people to please stop using the words fake news. It's either news or it's a fake story.
Thank you for that. I couldn't agree more, Elizabeth.
I'm with you, Elizabeth.
Thank you for that. And here's another email I want to ask you about. Ask Bob Longo about the Sinclair station's forced editorials. Local news stations all over the country owned by Sinclair Broadcast Group are being made by their corporate owner to run what are called must runs.
That's right.
And these are editorials that have been televised editorials and segments within the body of the newscast that are essentially pro-administration propaganda.
And it's been going on for a while. So we're not a Sinclair station. We're owned by the Cox Media Group. Out of Atlanta. That's right.
Yeah.
But we're not a Sinclair. There's no Sinclair station in Jacksonville. And so that doesn't happen here. But it happens in about 100 other markets across the country. And Sinclair folks will admit to some of this, but not all of it, that their story is they want their viewers to be educated on topics. But then they take a slant on it, and they either send down an editorial, which they force all their stations to take, which is one side of the story. It is almost always administration-leaning, right-wing, or Republican-leaning. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying what's wrong is to force a journalism company to do that on a local level. And then that's a unified message across 100 markets. So that's a campaign, right? That's an information campaign run by a company that is allegedly doing journalism. That's just not the way you do things. It's not the way we do things, and thankfully no one does it here. I don't think highly of it. I think it's the wrong thing to do. I think it sows the seeds of mistrust in at least half your audience every day. And I think that the people who carry it out should have more backbone and
would
say
you,
no.
Would you accept a job at Sinclair?
I would not. I would never apply for a job. I wouldn't take a call from them. Philosophically opposed to how they do business.
Well, with all of that said, you can come out and meet Bob tonight at his book launch party. It's a book reading of his new novel, Boomerang Bandito. This is kicking off at 6 o'clock at Mambo's in Tapestry Park on the South Side. This is exciting.
It is exciting.
A new book launch.
It is. Hey, there's hors d'oeuvres and drinks, too. I mean, come on. I mean, buy the book, sure, but go have a good time. It's really exciting. You know, I wrote a book in 2007-ish because I felt I could write, but I didn't know if it would be any good. And it was this thing that sold maybe 100 copies. But it taught me how to better frame characters in a fiction story. It taught me how to carry conversation and things like that. I had a core group of friends that looked at it and tore it apart for me. And then, so I went back and I told this story, and I think I did okay with it. So it was certainly fun to do. It was a passion project. It's a B plan maybe, and it's a side gig maybe, but I just like to do it mostly. I've always liked to write. I was a reporter back in the day, and I like telling stories. I like a good story well told to this day.
Well, it is a good story, and you can come hear more of it tonight and pick up a copy of this book, Boomerang Bandito. It is on shelves now. Bob Longo, the author and news manager, will be at Mambo's at 6. I'm sure you'll have a great crowd. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Melissa. Appreciate it.
We'll be right back.
Peoples Gas. Natural gas heat pumps may help contribute to air conditioning resiliency for businesses in Florida while reducing their carbon footprint. Learn more about natural gas heat pumps at peoplesgas.com/GHP.
Cypress Village is hosting an informative workshop on Tuesday, June 25th at Maggiano's Little Italy. Learn more about the gift of life care. More info at brookdale.com/cypressvillage or 807-6190.
Join us in celebrating the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, featuring Chasing the Moon events at WJCT and MOSH. Visit wjct.org/events to explore what's coming your way.
Florida marks a tragic anniversary. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
This Friday, we look at the third anniversary this week of the worst attack on gay Americans in the history of this country, the mass shooting at Pulse nightclub in Orlando, and the push for LGBTQ equality in the state since then.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Friday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
If you don't know his name, you know his work. Join WJCT on June 18th for an evening with Frontline's Michael Kirk, an award-winning documentarian. For tickets and more info, visit wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, Florida has one of the largest prison populations in America. So where do they go after they complete their sentences? When inmates are released, finding housing and jobs is a huge hurdle for them. That's why a new nonprofit is up and running in the city, working to provide transitional housing and job referrals for ex-offenders. It's called Bryant Homes, and it's partnering with city agencies. Jessica Noyes and Maurice Bryant are with Bryant Homes, and they join us now. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jessica, let's start with you. The Florida incarceration rate is off the charts, so the need for this is great. Because to reduce recidivism, people reoffending, they need a job. They need a place to live. That's where you come in. Tell us about Bryant Homes.
At Bryant Homes, we offer transitional living. What we will do there and what we do there is we provide housing for men that are coming straight out of prison. Often you need a home or somewhere to go as soon as you get out, especially if you don't have a home to go back to or cannot go back to. So we will provide this, and our guys will work with soft skills as well as with schooling to complete GED.
Wow, all the things that people need, Maurice, and you're partnering with the Jacksonville Reentry Center as well as the JSO. Bryant Homes was chosen to pilot this whole idea, not just a residence, but job skills training, mentorships. It's a sort of sounds like a wraparound approach for people that need a lot of things at once. Is that fair to say?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and so tell me a little bit more about how it works when an inmate comes to you, an ex-inmate.
Well, we normally run into guys that saying, hey, man, I need a job. So instead of us providing housing, I created a business called Bryant Visions, LLC. And now I can provide jobs in different areas of,
Like house painting, and what's the other one that you guys are doing? Electrical apprenticeships, welding.
Yes, welding.
Things like that, right?
Yes.
Okay. And those are all good jobs. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And so, you know, Jessica, it's hard to get a job even if you don't have a prison sentence in your past. It's incredibly hard if you have been incarcerated. But if people don't have employment, they're going to reoffend.
Correct. Most of your offenders come when you have, when you do not have the education. And a lot of individuals that are coming out, their highest level of education is a fifth grade reading level. A fifth grade reading level, I'm a full-time teacher, a fifth grade reading level is not average. It's way below average. If you have an eighth grade reading level, that's about your high school diploma average. So that would just be if you never went to high school and you went to just college or didn't go to college, academic level.
And how do you partner with JSO and the city's reentry center?
So we actually called the reentry center as when we decided that we wanted to be a transitional home. Maurice had done some research on the amount of transitional homes in Duval County, which is way below its neighboring towns, such as Orlando. Orlando has about close to 40, and Jacksonville has 30. And so we had reached out to JRAC and the director there, and Mr. Wright had gotten with us and said, tell me when you get the home. I have the guys. Tell me when you get the home. And so that's how we partnered with them, is we just reached out.
And there we are. And you were waiting to get your nonprofit designation to kind of get up and running. You're up and running now, though,
oh,
right?
We're up and running.
Yeah. So, Maurice, that's exciting, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. What's the most rewarding part about this for you?
Giving back to my community and just helping. I've been doing it all my life, so between group homes and community centers and just just people.
Yeah.
You know, and I just enjoy doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so for people that know someone that needs this kind of assistance, or maybe they're listening now and they need this kind of assistance, how do they hook into these services? How do they get connected with you? And how, and do you need volunteers? Do you need help?
We would love volunteers.
Yes. You would love volunteers.
We actually are just getting to the point where we do need them, because neither of us can do all of the media and social aspects of it. But if you would like to get involved, you can visit our Facebook, which is Bryant Homes 2019-2019. We also have a website. It's Bryant Noise Business with one S. wixsite.com/Bryant Homes.
Nobody's going to remember that.
Exactly. Nobody's going to remember that. So that's why I was pushing the Facebook first.
So look on Facebook first.
Yes. Okay. And our website's there.
And so, you know, the city, as you said, JREC, the Jacksonville Reentry Center, they have been working in this space for a long time. But nonprofits such as yours are vital too, because it's a pretty big need.
It is a huge need. Our focus is going to be probably younger men for the most part, and with minor drug crimes for the most part that are coming out, so that we can help, obviously, guide them back into a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And of employment. So yes, it is a huge need.
And where's the transitional housing in the city? Where's it located?
Well, we're actually in the process of trying to find one. Mm-hmm. So we're in the future, probably in the next couple of weeks, we can host donation rallies, or we can have a food truck rally, and then we can maybe charge a fee and all the proceeds will go to starting.
So you're still in the process of raising the funds to open up the transitional housing.
Yes.
And what are your thoughts about wherever you locate, the neighborhood where you're located, saying, not in my backyard?
Well, we're trying to create a home that's kind of comfortable for the offenders as well as, you know, the residents that was already there. So what we're trying to do is build it like a home. Mm-hmm. Keep up the yard, keep up the house, make everything look good so it won't really be a big of a problem.
How many people will you be able to house at any one time?
Depends on the square footage of the home. There is different requirements that you have to follow, especially if you go through JRAC. So there's a square footage per person. But per home, I mean, obviously, we're all human and we don't want to shove people in there.
Mm-hmm. So just a few people at a time.
So about four to five.
Yeah. But hey, that's 4 to 5 people that have a place to stay and a chance at a good job and will be less likely to commit another crime.
Correct.
And every little bit helps.
Yes.
And so kudos to you both for this effort. I know it's difficult, by the way, to get the paperwork done and get the 501c3 status that you need to make this kind of effort take off.
Yes.
I know how hard that is. And so kudos just getting it to this point. And so if you're interested in helping Jessica and Maurice, search Bryant Noise Homes on Facebook.
It is Bryant Homes.
Bryant Homes.
No, 2019.
Bryant Homes 2019 on Facebook. Jessica, Maurice, thanks for being with us. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
In a moment, a peek inside the 2019 Southern Living Idea House on Amelia Island. Stay with us. Bye.
Comcast Business, providing a gig speed network and gig-fueled applications that can help your business go beyond. Learn more at comcastbusiness.com. Comcast Business, beyond fast.
Cypress Village is hosting an informative workshop on Tuesday, June 25th at Maggiano's Little Italy. Learn more about the gift of life care. More info at brookdale.com/cypressvillage or 807-6190.
This land is your land, and this land is my land.
I'm Lisa Mullins. Words and music have always stirred hearts. Historian John Meacham and country music's Tim McGraw celebrate the songs that shaped America. We'll speak with them next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
As I went to walk in that ribbon of highway, I saw above me.
As a reporter in Shanghai, Frank Langfitt had an idea: free rides in exchange for conversation. So he slapped some signs on his car.
And they said it was a free loving heart taxi.
A free loving heart taxi.
Minfei Aixingche in Chinese.
And sounds better in Chinese.
It's much better in Chinese.
A look at China from the inside of a taxi cab this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
These days on the roads, more robots are in the driver's seat. What does that mean for us humans? Fewer people are learning to drive, and the combustion engine that fueled our economy and thrilled drivers is on its way out. Writer Dan Alpert on America's journey from Henry Ford to Elon Musk. Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's your chance to tour a showstopper of a home. It's the 2019 Southern Living Idea House. John Hillman is VP of Sales and Marketing for Crane Island. That's the location of this stunning home up on Amelia Island. And he joins us now. John, good morning.
Good morning.
I had the really good fortune to get a sneak peek at the Southern Living Idea House at a private media opportunity that was held last week. And I just have to say, it is absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you very much.
What an incredible home. And this is, if anyone who's picked up Southern Living magazine will know that brand. This is everybody's chance to peek inside the cutting edge concepts in interior design and home construction. So tell us a little bit about this house.
Yeah, sure. So we couldn't be more proud of this house. This is the first home completed at Crane Island. And it really sets the bar of what we care most about, which we want to have timeless design. We want to have a place that when people come, they're going to wonder how long these homes have been here because they just fit into the local aesthetic. And so it was a wonderful collaboration. Historical Concepts out of Atlanta, Georgia has been sort of at the forefront of Southern vernacular architecture for decades, probably 30, 40 years. So Jim Strickland and Clay Rakicki were the design architects. And then Southern Living also paired them with Heather Chaddock out of Birmingham, Alabama. Heather's been a very successful decorator for Southern Living for years and then went off on her own and actually formed her own textile company as well. So Heather brings this wonderful complement to them. And then it was a really tough decision. We had to pick from one of our four builders at Crane Island, and Riverside mm-hmm. Homes was selected. They had a great passion for the project. And, you know, let me tell you, to build nearly 6,000 square feet under roof in 5.5 months is a minor miracle. So they did an incredible job and pulled it off, and it was delivered on time.
It's a beautiful property and beautiful grounds around it. And tell me a little bit about Crane Island. That's an island within an island.
It is. It's a very rare situation where you've got Amelia Island that's, you know, 14 miles long and 3 miles wide. And there was this little spit, this little island that's been sitting there right on the Intercoastal Waterway. If you drive over the bridge to Amelia and you look to your right, you actually see Crane Island. And it's only been inhabited by one family since 1886.
Really?
Yep. The Broadbents moved here in 1886. He was a blacksmith and came to work in the shipbuilding industry and work on other, you know, trades. So he moved here with two daughters, and they grew up on the island till the mid-50s.
Huh. And then homes slowly started to be built on the property?
Never.
Or not until recently?
So I like to say this home, Sudden Living Idea Home, is the first home in over 100 years ever to be built at Crane Island.
Get out. Well, people, if this is piquing your curiosity, you can tour the 2019 Southern Living Idea House. It's open now through December 15th on Crane Island. People just need to get their tickets at Eventbrite, right, John? And a portion of the ticket sales actually goes to a good cause, the Amelia Island Museum of History.
That is correct. Yes, we're open Wednesday through Sunday, Wednesday to Saturday, 10 to 4, and on Sundays, 1 to 4. And you can buy your tickets in advance online. It's very easy. If you have a spur of the moment, you live in Jacksonville and you just want to drive up and see it, we're happy to have you, and you can buy your tickets at the door too.
That's good. We made the drive last week, myself and a few colleagues, and it is worth the drive. It is just a gorgeous thing to check out. And so if you love interior design, if you love architecture, you need to go and check out the 2019 Southern Living Idea House on Crane Island. John Hillman, VP of Sales and Marketing for Crane Island, thanks for driving down here to us.
Of course.
To tell us more about it, and kudos.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. We're very proud of it.
And that is now launched and open to the public. And finally, this hour, we have a project here at WJCT we're excited about launching. It's our new website, Adapt Florida. News Director Jessica Palumbo is here now to give us an update on that. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. This is another reminder for folks who haven't signed up for Adapt to go to adaptflorida.org. You can click sign up there or a pop-up form. Just fill out that pop-up form, and then you'll be notified when it launches, the moment we hit publish this month. It's coming this month. On Adapt, you'll hear stories from local people, from the Navy, in the area of real estate, from science, history, home builders, people who live in Jacksonville, about how they're adapting to sea level rise and climate change. If you're interested in those topics, and we know many of you who listen to First Coast Connect are, go to adaptflorida.org and sign up now.
This is an issue of importance to all of us in this community, how we will collectively face the effects of a warming world. And end of the month is our launch date, so not much longer to birth this baby.
This month. It's coming.
That's right. News Director Jessica Palumbo, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
That's our show today. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And we always value your emails. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. On tomorrow's show, we'll take a look at all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, keep listening for the Electro Lounge. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.